Simon Alexander Ong, thank you so much for joining me on the Talks with Tony podcast. I've given you your full title because that's how you feature on all of your social media. So for those people who don't know you, you are an author of an amazing best-selling book.
Thank you.
A coach, a life coach, an entrepreneur. You've been featured in so many different forms of media. But there will undoubtedly be a small handful of the population who don't actually yet know who you are. And that's what today is all about. So thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me on.
I really appreciate it. So I actually first came across you, I think it was 2020, 2021, mm-hmm. in the early days of Clubhouse when every single person...
Everybody was on it, isn't it?
Well, that's because we were all bored during lockdown. Most people didn't go out. I'll be honest, I did venture every now and again. It was an opportunity to meet and come across people that we never would have come across before. So although it was taking over many people's lives at one point, I have massive gratitude for it because it introduced me to so many people just like yourself that I never would have come across. So I've done you a mini intro, but what I'd love to know is for those who don't yet know you, how would you describe who you are and what you do today?
Sure. So the way I would introduce myself would be something like this. Everything I do is designed to awaken people's imagination of what is truly possible so they can live a better story. And I do that through my work as a coach. I've worked with some incredible people, from Michelin star chefs to TV presenters to celebrities and C-suite executives. Keynote speaking, having worked with organizations such as Meta, Adobe, EY and Microsoft, and writing my book, Energize, which I hope will be the first of more to come.
Nice.
And that was one of the things that was positive during the COVID pandemic, apart from becoming a father for the first time, was getting this book deal with Penguin, which was mind-blowing to write your first book with such an established publisher.
Huge.
And then to go on and have the likes of Simon Sinek, Marie Forleo, Marshall Goldsmith and Ali Abdaal endorse it. Wow. I mean, that really was the icing on the cake. And that was my journey since leaving the world of corporate. So that's what I now do. And I hope that everybody that comes across my work goes away energized, empowered, and inspired.
I absolutely love that. And I would challenge anyone who spends time with you, whether it's physically or whether it's listening to podcast episodes or you do a lot on social media, I would challenge anyone to not feel energized by what you're saying. You've got one of the most relaxed and calming voices, but actually what you also do is you fire up people. And you're absolutely right. You know, you read the foreword of your book, you read the endorsements. And when you've got people like Simon Sinek saying, this is exactly what we need right now, and Marie Forleo saying, not just read it, but actually do it. You can't listen to those people and not actually do it. So I absolutely love what you're all about. We've realized we have so many mutual friends, and that's going to give us the opportunity to talk about that a little bit later on. But what I'd love to do, and I know so many people do it, but I think it's really important to do is to go back to the beginning. We know what you do now, but you know, this is the year of 2023.
Yeah.
So if we look back at early years, as you say, you left the world of corporate. So would it be fair to say that corporate was always going to be the route for you based on, you know, expectations, upbringing, heritage, etc.?
Absolutely. I, very much like many Chinese individuals, I was a very shy young Chinese boy. I went to school and it was very difficult for me to embed myself into the classroom and make many friends because I was very much part of a minority. I grew up in the southeast of England and I was one of maybe 4 or 5 Chinese students, not just in my year, but the entire school.
The whole school.
And so I was very reserved and I wouldn't put my hand up to go to the front of the class and share my stories or present an idea. I would wait to be chosen. And I grew up with this mentality that I had to focus on my academics first. Social life came second, but the first thing was I did my best to be top of the class or as close to top of the class as I could get. And then I remember talking to my parents when I was a teenager and I said to them, I'm not quite sure what I want to do when I graduate. I always knew university was going to be on the cards because that was what I was gearing up to do in terms of the education I went through, the subjects I studied. And I remember my parents saying, as long as you earn good money and you get a job as either a doctor, a lawyer, an accountant, or a banker, we'll be proud of you. And so from that point, the definition of success for me was very limited to these job titles. And having watched films such as Wall Street with Michael Douglas and Boiler Room with Ben Affleck, it influenced me to pursue a career in banking. Mm. So I studied at the London School of Economics. And upon graduation, I entered the world of finance in the middle of 2007, which was, in hindsight, a crazy time to start a career in finance, because this was leading up to the global financial crisis in 2008. And just to make things a little more interesting, the company I started with was Lehman Brothers, which collapsed in September 2008. Mm. Now, even though that would spark nearly a decade of being in and out of work within the financial services industry, in my head, it kickstarted the catalyst to what I now get to do today. Because for the first time in my life, I started asking myself, what did success mean to me? And what sort of impact did I want to have in the world? And I realize now just how powerful those two questions are. What does success mean for you? The reason that is an important question is because so many of us are exhausted, not because we are physically doing too much, but one, we are doing too little of the things that bring us joy. Mm-hmm. And two, we are running someone else's race. The second question, what sort of impact do you want to have in a world? It is also an important question because our value as human beings is determined by just how much more we have given to the world than we have taken from it. So that experience of the financial crisis, while it was tough in the moment, it really set the foundation to what I now get to do today.
I absolutely love that you've been able to create the positive from the negative. And a real thing that I've noticed a thread along what you do is looking at things from a different perspective. Mm. And so for many people, they will have experienced, you know, from a young age, the expectations, yeah. You know, yours were very limited. The expectation in my life was you go to university because you've got the chance to. I'm the youngest of six children. Not everyone had the chance to go to university. Mm. So therefore you have the opportunity, you should do it. But similarly to you, I kind of was thinking, is this really what I want to do? I had no idea what I wanted to do. And actually, with hindsight, I realized that's because at school, and this is why I'm massively passionate now about helping younger generations to understand that they can do things that aren't just within that little pigeonhole of you must do these roles, is that at school, I said I wanted to study sciences because I wanted to be in medicine in some format, and basically was told you're not really smart enough. And harsh truths are what are needed. But also there were many other options. It didn't have to be that I was a doctor. I could have studied physiotherapy, which was something that I wanted to go into, but it was a blanket. You don't fit in that pigeonhole. So to hear you say the expectation was so limited too. Yeah. We will be proud of you if you do these particular job roles. It's set you off on the path. Mm-hmm. You know, are you grateful for that opportunity now with hindsight, or at the time did you feel stifled by a must fall into these roles?
It's interesting because being older now and away from my parents, or I should say my dad, because my mum unfortunately passed when I was 17. So being away from my family and being able to create my own life, I've had a lot more chance to reflect on the upbringing.
Yeah.
And there's a love-hate relationship in a way, because I think there's some good parts and some drawbacks. The drawbacks was clearly the fact that I didn't have the chance to explore what I wanted to do. I didn't have the chance to express myself because of the limitation in terms of what success looks like. But on the flip side, I think one of the greatest lessons I took from my parents was hard work. Mm. You know, maybe it wasn't about doing well academically, maybe it wasn't about doing well in finance, but the ethos of hard work in whatever you pursue is one lesson that I can take from my childhood.
Yeah.
So the hard work was the positive side. The limitation of what success meant, I think, was a drawback because it would take me a number of years into my adult life before I had the courage to go out and explore my curiosity. Mm. And I think a lot of that was because of the barriers and limitations I had due to that upbringing.
And I think a lot of people can relate to that, whether it be that they either didn't, or polar opposite, you know, they had no guidance, they had no, you should do this. And it's very easy to look back with hindsight and say, I wish this had happened, or I wish this hadn't. But it did put you on the trajectory because, as you say, you know, and we should just clarify, it wasn't actually your fault that the Lehman Brothers collapse happened.
It wasn't my fault.
Although you worked in that industry, but it was a really short time in, just over 12 months into your career. You know, you've studied so hard, you've gone to the London School of Economics, you've graduated, you've done what's expected of you. And the irony now being that many people will relate to, definitely kind of post-pandemic, is that oftentimes people in those particular industries that you're talking about, it's a job for life.
Yeah.
You're set for life. You work your way up the corporate ladder. The reality being you work your way up the corporate ladder. And if you get to the point of retiring before you die from the stresses and the strains from it, you usually, you know, retire on 40% of what you couldn't live on when you were working. But, you know, with hindsight, the ability to then identify that you have this purpose and this mission in life. I love the two things, and it's really interesting because one of the questions that I'll always ask guests is around the definition of success, and we're going to come to that. But also the word impact. So in what I do, and I know we share a lot of values in terms of you're a public speaker, you're a keynote speaker, you want to help and support people, which is something I also do. And that word impact is always at the core, because we're all making an impact in the world one way or another. It's about you being purposeful in deciding what that impact is. And you're making a massive positive impact now. Obviously, there's future lessons for you, you know, a father, you're able to pass on those, you know, generational wealth and knowledge to your children going forward. When it came to the collapse, and you say you stayed in that industry, so although this kickstarted, was it, you know, a massive ignition of corporate world doesn't work? You know, what should I do now? Or was it just, you know, an acorn of an idea of maybe I'm not set for the financial world?
It started the seed. So when I left Lehman Brothers, I moved to a hedge fund. And from a hedge fund, I moved into two or three other jobs before I finally quit the industry. But it was a series of events that culminated in me making the decision to leave. So the first event was the global financial crisis. That got me questioning what success meant to me and the desire to explore the world beyond finance. Because up until that point, that is all I knew.
Yeah.
You know, I spent most of my working day alongside colleagues in finance. I would go socializing with people in finance, and I would spend time on the weekends with people in finance. So I was very much living in a bubble. The hedge fund job that I went to after Lehman Brothers, on the outside, sounded glamorous. Simon's a junior trader. He's working with senior portfolio managers overseeing billions of dollars. But the people that got paid were not people my level. It was the people at the top. And so when I joined, I felt very much like the administration assistant. I was getting people's lunches. I was doing all the operational duties. I was the first one in and the last one to leave. And it was very exhausting on my energy, physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And there was a point where I was going to a client entertainment event towards Christmas one year. And I remember on the way there, I texted my girlfriend at the time and I said, hey, I'm going to be taking probably the last train home. So I'll be back home around sort of 1:30. So don't wait up for me. Feel free to go to bed if you need to first. So I go into this nightclub, which is downstairs. I check in my bag, I check in my coat. And as the drinks start flowing, the entertainment kicks off, and the alcohol starts flooding through my body, I lose total perception of time. And I somehow get out of that club mid-morning, stumble into a taxi, get back home, and wanting to avoid any confrontation with my girlfriend, I collapse in the bathtub using that as my bed. And I probably had my contact lens on for now well over 20 hours. So you can imagine the state I was in. Still dressed in my suit. And as I slowly brought myself to wake because of a noise next to me, I saw my girlfriend in tears next to me, just worried sick. She couldn't sleep because she tried to call me. She tried to leave messages, but I just wouldn't reply because my phone was off. And I replied with two words. I said, I'm fine. I'm fine. But the fact is, I was anything but fine. And so once I sobered up in the coming day or two, we had a conversation about where I was. And I became honest. It was tough for me because, you know, when you are young boys growing up, you are told by family and society around us, man up, toughen up. You got to handle this yourself. And so it wasn't comfortable for me to open up about what was really going on. And I just said to her, you know, I'm lost. I feel directionless. And I thought this financial career was really going to work out. The crisis happened. And the job I thought I was going to work hard at and get promoted would be at Lehman Brothers. But now that company doesn't exist, I'm in a job which is highly toxic. There's no career progression. And I'm regularly shouted at by bosses, and yet I have to work my ass off still. And if I'm honest, I think I'm using the drink, television, nights out, just to escape the reality I was in. And so she just said, I'm here to support. And I think when we had that conversation, it not only connected us at a deeper level, but it gave me the courage to hand in my resignation and choose a job, still within finance, because that is all I knew, still within finance, that was a lot kinder on the hours. So I moved from a trading job, which was very intense, very pressured and very toxic, to a research role, which was kinder on the hours, 9 to 5, a lot less stress, and where I was more in control of what I could deliver and where the people that hired me trusted in what I could put forward. But that also gave me the time after work and on weekends to start going out to seminars, to events, to workshops, read different books, get more sleep, upgrade my diet, make sure I got exercise on a regular basis. It really gave me the time to transform my future. So I think a combination of some of these events really led me to making that decision.
And I think a lot of people will relate to that doing, not necessarily even if they're in the same industries, but, you know, quite often, you know, we go into a particular job role or a business, the expectation versus reality is very different. Outside world, it looks really glamorous, as you say, you know, the entertaining in the evenings, the client meetings, the, you know, three-piece suits, whatever else it is. But in reality, the fact that you were feeling, as I am certain many other people will have felt, you know, misaligned with it, in pain, in whatever way that is, not necessarily physical, but, you know, going through the motions. And there'll be many people who've faced that also. And that, for the scary thing for me is that usually it gets to a breaking point. And at that point, you were in a really privileged position that you had someone around you. So how important is it to have people around you, in your opinion, to, you know, throw an arm around you when you need a little bit of support, or, you know, put a rocket up your backside if needed, if you're doing all of the wrong things? How important do you think that accountability, that support network is?
It was massively important. I mean, just looking back, I think what also gave me the courage to change was the pain of staying where I was became greater than the pain of change, even though the change was unknown. And the support I had from my girlfriend, now wife, told me that one of life's greatest hacks is who your partner is. You know, a lot of us talk about environment, who we spend time with, what we read, what we watch, what we listen to, but you can't talk about environment without considering who your life partner
closest,
is.
Yeah.
Because they are the person that is going to influence you the most. They're going to give you the courage to take risks or limit you in terms of what you think is possible. So having her by my side has been a massive influence and privilege on this journey. She has seen the ups and the downs, you know, the wins and the losses. And so her challenge, but also her encouragement at the times I need it, has been massively impactful as to where I've got to in this journey.
I absolutely love that. And, you know, I often say that we run property investment businesses. We are, you know, we've got multiple different businesses. I have the ability, you know, to get on a train, come to London today, do multiple interviews, meet amazing people, but none of that would be possible without my husband in the background being, one, the biggest driving force behind it, two, the biggest challenge where needed to hold me back, because I'm a big blue sky thinker, and quite often, you know, he's telling me, hang on, we can't, you know, build the casino on the moon that you want to just yet. But also we've got two young sons. Well, they're not that young now. They're 10 almost and 13. And I cannot express how much we need those people in our life. So I absolutely love that you have that support network, but also that you've created that as a business to be the support network for those who don't have it. Because I mean, many people are in similar positions where they're facing challenges in life right now, and they don't have the person to say, this isn't on, because there was a little bit of tough love there too. You know, I'm not willing to wait up at 1:30, 4:35, 30 for you to come home. It's not fair, but also to work with you. So there's definitely a need, I think, for more support. And we were talking before we hit record about being part of masterminds and groups and the importance of having that support network. But there's a few things I'm always, I go forward and I go back. I want to touch upon there, which is, one, we will come to losing your mum at 17, because that's undoubtedly shaped your life in some way. And again, something I can resonate with, having lost my mum at 21. But secondly, although dad was still there at that point, how difficult was that conversation to say to dad, I'm still in the financial industry, but I'm not on the trajectory that people expect as the most successful one. You know, the trading, the working your way up, with the reality being very different, to then take what would potentially be considered by some people a step down or a step back, still within the financial world, but in this 9-to-5 job in research, likely to be less earning capacity, likely to be, although you had all of the positives, less stress, less demanding hours, you know, different trajectory. How did your family take that?
So if I'm honest, that part of the journey wasn't too bad, partly because I was very selective about what I shared, because I knew he would have certain expectations. So I would mask it by saying, this is a good job. Yeah, I've got a good opportunity to go and try something new. So I would talk about the positives more than the drawbacks. But the part I think that was the most challenging for me, when I think about the transition from being an employee to starting my own business, it was a transition that was the most difficult. How do I tell my dad that I'm no longer going to continue in the world of finance and I'm going to do something where there's no guarantee of an income, where I don't know from month to month if I'm going to get paid, especially just starting out, and there's no pension, there's no benefits. If I don't work, I don't get paid. How would he take to that? For me, that was the bigger challenge, because I had to navigate that, because I knew he would eventually find out. You know, I'm using social media, he's on social media. So it's no question in time he will find out what I'm up to. So for me, the mental challenge came down to how do I share that in a way that it doesn't cause me harm in terms of continuing to go on this journey, and it would get him to support it. So that for me was a lot tougher.
And a difficult thing for many people starting out in business. You know, you talk about the realities of it, which is there's no guarantee of an income. There's no guarantee of success. And by this point, I'm guessing your definition of success must have changed, because, you know, the old Simon success being working your way up the career ladder. So very similarly to you, I'm a massive believer. I think you did it the right way, working in the job, using the free time, or if not allocating free time, because a lot of us say we don't have free time, but it's about what you prioritize, isn't it? So you were bringing in all of these positives into your life, making time for sleep, that I love, because I am, you know, I know a lot of people are part of the whole, you know, hustle, grind and sleep on for 3-4 hours doesn't work for me. I like my sleep. My sleep makes me more productive. So you started getting better sleep. You started mixing the people that you were spending your time with. So you said you were going to seminars, etc. The 9-to-5 gave you the freedom, the time to start looking into different alternatives. What was the time frame between getting started on this new job and the free time, the career path, to look at helping and supporting other people and moving into the coaching world, and leaving the job? How long a time frame was that?
Sure. So when I first started looking outside of finance, I had no idea what I wanted to do, because I'd never really thought about starting a business at a serious level. So for me, I just went out, I tried things, I partnered with people. I think there was about 3 or 4 different ideas I got involved with. None of them worked out, but they were massive in terms of what I learned from it, in terms of how do I partner with the right people? What do I need to have in place better next time? What business skills do I need to work on? And it wasn't until 2012 that I went to a 2-day seminar in London, and it was all about coaching as a skill. As I heard the trainer speak on stage, I thought to myself, isn't this what your best friend does? Listen to you, challenge you. And I never imagined that you could earn money from doing such a role. But by the end of this 2-day seminar, I went back home and I told my girlfriend, I think I want to sign up for this. It just sounded really interesting. And I liked the idea of using this skill to impact other people's lives. So a few weeks later, I signed up to do 2 courses with this Academy of Coaching. And a couple of years later, so this was all done on the side of still having a full-time job. I graduated from there. And then it would take another couple of years to start building up some clients on the side. And then it was towards the end of 2016 where I handed in my resignation to fully leave the corporate world and start as a coach. So that was the timeline. It took a few years. But even the decision to leave was not easy. You know, if anyone has worked in a corporate job and has decided to leave to start their own business, you can relate. It is not an easy decision, because once you exit and you start to make some success of your business, it is difficult to go back. So when you start to have bad days, if you have some months where you're not making any money, a lot of people end up with this dilemma. Do I go back to get some cash back into what I'm doing rather than just stick this out with living on very low income. Mm. And so I knew that once I handed that in, I couldn't go back. So it took me about 3 or 4 months of back and forth in my head of, do I resign now? Do I resign later? Because really there was a dilemma that was put in front of me. On the one hand, I had 3 coaching clients on the side. But I knew that if I got a 4th client, my coaching would suffer.
Yeah.
Because I could only do this on the weekends and the evenings. Mm-hmm. And also my day job would suffer because I would literally be living 2 lives and I wouldn't be able to focus on anything. So the option was, do I keep with that scenario, stick to the full-time job and limit myself to just 3 clients? Or do I quit the day job and see how far I can take this?
Burn the bridges.
Indeed, burn the bridges. And so I did burn the bridges. And as they say, the rest is history.
And I think it's easy so often for people to then go, yeah, but it's all right for you, Simon, because, which is why I always want to go back to the beginning, because it's very easy to look at someone like yourself, you know, featured in Forbes and BBC and the Huffington Post and all of these amazing media outlets, standing on stages in front of, you know, hundreds and thousands of people. It's very easy for people to say it's okay for you, but I always like to get to the heart of it, because let's be honest, every great story is a hero's journey. There's been highs and lows along the way. So I love the fact that you did it. And our time frames were really similar. I started investing around 2015, left my job in 2016, didn't really want to leave my job. My husband was supposed to leave his job. That's why we started investing. The fear, and excuse my French, but shit or bust, is this going to work or isn't it? How important is it for you to have a strategic plan? Because I know that you are a strategist as well. You know, this isn't a case of saying, if you don't like your job, just leave it and move into another industry. You've done a lot of legwork in the background. A couple of questions that I'm going to ask. Yeah. One, did you tell the people around you in the corporate world, your kind of the people that you were seeing day to day in a research finance job, this is what I'm doing outside of it? And if you did, why? And if not, why not? And then we'll move on to the strategy question.
So while I was building this coaching business on the side of my full-time job, I didn't tell people in the company I worked with, but I did tell people outside the company I worked with. So when I went to networking events or I went to workshops, I would say, I'm working to become a coach. Mm-hmm. I would tell people what I was doing. Inside the company, I didn't. If they found out, that's a different issue because then it's up to them if they want to come and talk to me, but no one did. And this was this funny situation because I knew that they knew. They knew that I knew they knew, but we never talked about it. And there was this really funny situation. So in the final few months before I handed in my resignation, before everybody knew why I was going to resign, the company brought in a trainer to train our team and a few other teams on the floor that we were working on public speaking. And so we spent a day learning how to public speak. But of course, I'm already doing this on the side.
Yeah.
I'm already trying to build my reputation as a speaker. And so we're split into teams of 2 or 3. And at the end of the day, we have to then, taking all the techniques we learn, we then have to present our case to the rest of the room. And the rest of them scores each of the teams on how well they've done. And then we analyze, what did you like about this team? What could they improve on, as a way for all of us to improve our communication? My team won comfortably. And I remember walking out of the room and my colleagues talking amongst themselves. And I overheard, because we all kind of walked out in a similar corridor. And they were saying things such as, well, of course that team was going to win. Simon speaks for, Simon's doing a lot of speaking outside anyway. So they naturally had an advantage. And so I just kind of laughed in my head. It's like, I knew they knew.
But they never mentioned it.
Nobody openly talked about it. And I said, I'm completely fine with that. Because if they don't have a problem with it, better for me. And when I handed in my resignation, everyone knew what the next step was. But it was also beautiful because they all were very supportive. They all came to me and said, Simon, what's the best way to keep in touch? What social media should we follow you on?
I love that.
So it was amazing to have that support.
Yeah.
But no, I never tell the people in the company I was on this journey.
What do you think stopped you from telling people? Was there, you know, was it a negative emotion? Was it fear of judgment? Or was it very much, that's my work life, this is my outside of work new business coaching life?
For me, it was fear of my job being at risk.
Yeah.
That if I told them, then they could use that against me. Mm-hmm. And they would say, hey, you know, in your contract, it says you can't be doing stuff outside of work, or you can't be building other businesses. But because I'm very strategic, I looked at that contract way ahead of being worried about it being used against me. And it was great because in the contract, it said you can't be involved in the business outside of your full-time work if it conflicts with what you're doing.
And there was zero conflict.
And there was zero conflict because coaching and speaking has zero correlation with finance. It was different if I was starting an investment club, or I was looking to bring in investors for a project that I'm going to run outside. So anything finance related, there would have been an obvious conflict. But there was zero conflict. It was two completely different industries. So I was safe in that regard. Yeah. And maybe that was why they never openly talked about
it. Yeah, and because you didn't, it was more strategically planned that you wouldn't discuss it just in case it brought it into to question. And obviously there was a fear about bringing, because it's always about fear of bringing the company into disrepute. That's really the reason why. Fear of competition, fear of bringing the company into disrepute. So let's move on to the strategy side of it, because everything that you've done so far has been strategic in that way. But quite often, because there are a lot of coaches out there, and a lot of coaches, a lot of self-proclaimed ones, a lot of accredited ones, and there are people who are given amazing advice, but sometimes others who aren't. And I think in that instance, you know, having a strategy and a process, how important is that for anyone who, because there's undoubtedly going to be people who are thinking, I'd like to be a coach, I'm keen to do it, what is the route to success? How important was it having a plan, and how rigidly did you stick to it?
Very important. I mean there's two sides to think about this. On the one hand, it's important to move forward with intention, to know what you want to get out of something. But at the same time, and this is a bit of the paradox with planning, at the same time, you also have to be comfortable with the strategy and plan not working out. Because life does throw you curveballs. You know, if you wanted to open a restaurant in 2020, you would never have predicted in your strategy or plan that the COVID pandemic would make that a no-go, because you just couldn't. Hospitality was shut for a couple of years. So for me, I was intentional and strategic, but more within the things I could control. So when I look back, you know, I'm often asked by the habits for success. And when we look at habits of success, we tend to look at lifestyle habits, which are great, you know, they're important. But I think we also need to look at the business habits that can make success inevitable. And one of those habits that I was very intentional about was relationship building. Building relationships, expanding my network, because I knew that you may have the best product or service, but if you can't market that and nobody knows about it, you've got a hobby. And knowing that up front, I made relationship building one of the most important things I spent time on. So I made an effort to go to events. I was the first there, sometimes the last to leave, but not always. The more important thing I found was being the first to an event, because then I could sit as close to it, if not on the front row. And when you're on the front row, you meet so many more interesting people. Than sitting at the back of the room. Because when you're at the front, you get to meet the speakers. You get to meet maybe the speakers' teams, because speakers tend to come early to prepare, to, you know, do the tech tests to make sure the slides are working. And you also get to meet the host of the event. You get to meet the people that are organizing the event. So hey, even if I'm not involved as a speaker at this event, by building a relationship with the organizer, maybe I can speak at the next one. So that was one of the things I did, is I deliberately built relationships. Indeed.
Love that.
And even when I would go to an event and I couldn't connect with the person I wanted to, I always thought, well, who could be the next best? And it was a technique I learned from Tim Ferriss. So Tim Ferriss said, too many people only want to be associated with and build relationships with the people that win the gold medals. But he said, we forget that the people that win the silver and the bronze will eventually win the gold medal in the future. So actually, if you can't get hold or build relationships with the people that are winning the gold medals, the silver and bronze is where the hidden treasures are, because not everyone is going for those names. So I remember there was one event I went to. I went to see Marie Folio do a book launch. There was about 65, 70 of us. And at the end, as you can imagine, she had a huge crowd surrounding her to get copies of their book signed. And I said, well, I'm not going to get a chance to speak to her at this event, but why don't I just connect with her team? So I started speaking to members of her team, and there was a guy I connected really well with, and I asked him, how long are you all in London for? And he told me that they were here in London for a week and they would be spending time on radio shows and speaking events and members clubs to help promote her book. And I said, hey, why don't we connect on Instagram? And I will send you a list of bars and restaurants you should check out while you're here if you have time.
Love it.
And he said, that's fantastic. So we connect on Instagram and I just sent him a list. And when he went back to New York, he dropped me a DM and said, hey, we checked out two of the things on that list. Thank you so much for the recommendation. And we stayed in touch for a couple of years. And in January 2020, when Penguin sent an email to Marie, and Marie didn't reply because she gets a lot of emails requesting her to endorse a book, I dropped a Instagram direct message to this guy that I knew in her team. And I said, hey, you know, it's been great keeping in touch. By the way, I wanted to ask a favor and please say no if it's something you're not comfortable with. But would you be able to check in with Marie when you next catch up with her to see if she could provide an endorsement for my book? And he didn't reply for a couple of days. And then one night he sends me a DM and he says, Simon, tomorrow Marie will send a short email to your publisher. I nudged, I championed your cause, and she wants to be involved. And that was the power of building relationships, but also building relationships where you are looking to serve and give value without any expectation of return. Because at the time I built a relationship with him in London, I was in no position to write a book yet. Mm. It would be a couple of years further before discussions about a book would even begin. And so that for me is a great example of how building relationships and expanding your network, but being someone who is useful and of value can allow good things to return.
I absolutely love that. And I am a huge believer in it simply because you were doing something good first. Mm. You know, you were given without the expectation of, it was no seed planted of, I'm going to do this because in 2 years' time, but you were laying the foundations. And I think being a good person goes a really long way. I think the desire to serve and to help and support pays dividends much further down the line. And I think a lot of people can learn a huge amount from that. I live by a motto, which is value before victory. Yeah. And the value given is quite often, you know, light years behind the victory that you get. So by that point, so, you know, you've built a business by this point, you've burnt the bridges, no longer, you know, I'm at the three client point, I need to get four and beyond. You could double down on it in terms of the amount of time that you could allocate to it because you were no longer in the job. By that point, and I'm going to ask you if it differs now, by that point, what was the definition of success for you? Very different to the finance world, I'm guessing.
Very different by this point. The main goal for me, success-wise, was to make this coaching practice a success. So to be able to live off comfortably the income I could make from this business. The reality started to shift very quickly, though, in a positive way. Because what I learned is that when you start to do something you are passionate about, what you initially wanted becomes far greater than you ever imagined. So within 18 months of going full-time, I remember working with a client who worked in Barclays over in Canary Wharf. And she said to me in one session, she said, Simon, I'm really enjoying our coaching. I'm wondering, have you explored public speaking? And I said to her, I've done public speaking. Of course, I've been speaking for a while and I've been building it up, but I was only ever using it for marketing to share with a wider audience what I do so I can use it as lead generation for my coaching. But I had never really pursued it as a paid career, as something I could generate a lot of income from. And she said, the reason I ask is because our company's putting together a series of leadership seminars in the new year. And one of those topics is about goal setting and mindset. And I think you would be great for it. And so would you be okay with me introducing you to the person running this? And I said, sure, I'm up for a challenge.
Yes, please.
And I would love to stretch myself and try something new. So I remember doing that and it went a lot better than I imagined. And on the back of it, they not only invited me back again to do another talk, but we ended up shooting a commercial that went nationwide. So I remember people sending me photos and videos. Simon, I just saw you on the big screen. I just saw you in the cinema. I just saw you on in the Canary Wharf next to Holland and Barrett. And that got me thinking, actually, speaking is a really interesting area to explore. So even though I had this idea of success being building a great coaching practice, the speaking part 18 months later just started growing.
Yeah, snowballed.
I got inquiries from organizations, conferences to say, hey, Simon, can you come speak here? Can you do a fireside chat? And so speaking started to become the dominant force in what I was running. I mean, I still coach today, but I coach a lot less people. And the entry point is higher because it helps me manage the energy for that. But speaking now is probably 70, 80% of my time of what it takes up. So it's the majority of my time now. And that led me to be interviewed with the likes of BBC News, Sky News, and that then got me in front of Penguin to talk about the book. So it taught me the power of speaking. It's not just awareness about your work, but it's also powerful from a brand perspective because people come to an event. It's not just the people at the event that get to know your work, but if they share their experience on social media, they take photos, they take videos, they tell their friends, that just starts to expand your reach and the influence you have.
I'm sitting here with a huge smile on my face because one, I have massive gratitude that that happened because it puts you in front of the likes of me and gives me the opportunity to interview and bring your message to so many more people. But if we look back at that, I suppose it comes down to the relationship building again.
Yeah.
You created a positive impact in the life of this lady in who worked in Barclays in Canary Wharf. She saw something inside of you. Again, coming back to the being a good person, it goes an awful long way. Recognised you and put you forward for it, but that led on to the public speaking journey that you now focus on. Public speaking is my biggest passion. Yeah. I too fell into it, and to know that you're giving not just value to people in terms of the public speaking, but also showcasing what's possible.
Yeah.
You know, all of these additional opportunities that come off the back of it. And I love the fact that, you know, the book is just stage one and there's so many more and we're just scratching the surface. So I suppose there's a bit of a theme in everything that we're hearing here, from relationship building to being strategic and intentional, not being afraid to take risks, because, you know, all of the, everything in life is just as easy not to do as it is to do. So being strategic and intentional in that way, but knowing that it could go wrong as well as right. And the positive spin on it, the perspective of it, because you've constantly got a smile on your face. You seem to see the good in everything. And I think that's an amazing trait. But I'm going to go back before we go forward, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Because you mentioned earlier on that, you know, very sadly you lost your mum at age 17, which is such a young age to lose anyone, but to lose such an important figure within your life. How do you think that changed your life in terms of what you were doing? How do you think it changed you emotionally? Because you talk a lot about energy, and a lot of your learnings, a lot of the speeches that you deliver are around energy, both physical and emotional, spiritual, and, you know, moving forward into all of those business areas. How did it affect you, and how do you cope with it at such a young age?
So what happened is, I remember I was in the physics class and the teacher comes up to me. And he says, Simon, the headmaster would like to see you. Now, usually when you hear those words when you're at school, the first thing that comes into your head is, what have I done wrong and what am I in trouble for? And being a Chinese student, I was lost because there wasn't really any trouble I got myself into. And so I remember walking down the corridor towards his office and my head was just full of anxiety, thinking about, what is he going to say? Is my dad going to find out? What is he going to say if I'm in trouble? And I got to his office, I sat down, and he was actually looking out of the window. And as he turned around and he came, he sat on the chair. I saw in the corner of my eye my dad outdoors in the reception area. And he didn't look great. And so at that moment, before the headmaster even said what he was about to say, I knew it wasn't because I was in trouble. And he said to me, Simon, take whatever time you need to take out. The teaching staff will be here for you. You have a contact. And when you're ready to come back, just drop us a message and we'll organize your return. But we'll be in contact with your father. He's outside there. Unfortunately, your mum had a tragic accident and she's in a coma now. We don't know if she's going to wake up from the coma. And he's going to take you and your brother to the hospital. So we go in a car, we go to the hospital. It was just silence in that car because we were all in our heads. What happened? Is she going to make it? What can we do? So we get to the hospital and she is lifeless. And we spend the next few days just in and out of hospital next to her. And then the moment we knew this was not going to be a good outcome was when the doctors came back and said, you know, now her kidneys are failing and the organs just started failing one by one. And we knew there was only one way this was going to go. And so a few weeks later, we were holding her funeral. And when you go through something like that, it teaches you so many life lessons. I mean, you mature overnight like that. But the one that stuck with me were two words: don't wait. I mean, that experience taught me the fragility of life. And so don't wait became something that powered me forward to collapse that gap between idea and execution. You know, you have these ideas of what you want to do, put it into action. Mm. Don't wait so long, because you are never guaranteed a tomorrow. And she reminded me of that fact, because we lose sight of that so quickly. We enter this tragic scenario, and many live it today. Mm-hmm. We enter this tragic scenario where we live as if we're never going to die, and then die having never really lived. So we forget that the joy of living is to actually experience the magic of life. But we forget that so quickly. And so that just gave me the energy to try things, to experiment, to fail, that I probably wouldn't have had if I didn't go through that experience. Mm.
And it's such a horrific experience that you've been through, but your ability to, again, with hindsight, look back and realise, yes, you matured at such a young age, but the tragic passing of your mum gave you the opportunity to realise that life is short. And your ability to see the positive in the negative and create something good is something that I think very few people have. And none of us know, you know, I don't know your mum, I can't say whether she would be proud of you or not, but I know, having sons of my own, that if God forbid the worst were to happen to me, if they turned out to be the type of people who took the negative, turned it into the positive. And actually these things that have happened to you, you know, the failing of Lehman Brothers when you've just got into it, many people could go, life's not fair.
Yeah.
Mum passing away when you were 17, you know, going into a job for life that didn't become a job for life, and the whole world stopped turning. That could have very easily set you off on the path of going in completely the wrong direction, or feeling really sorry for yourself. Why me? It's not fair. So your ability to utilize that to fuel you forward, I think, is second to none.
Thank you.
So it's led to you, you know, not only that, but inspiring so many other people, because there'll undoubtedly be people who are listening to the podcast who face similar scenarios.
Yeah.
And it's that ability to take stock and look at, you know,
definitely. I mean, it's so important. I mean, we're human. There are so many things we share in common. And I think that you will inevitably have setbacks and challenges in both your personal and professional lives. But actually, it is in your darkest moments that equip you with the wisdom and the insight to build the best moments of your life. And when we think about the way we respond to these sort of situations, a word comes up in my head that I introduce in my book, Energize. I first mentioned this word called paranoia, which we all know about. Paranoia is this feeling that the world is out to get you in some way, that somebody's trying to sabotage my chance for promotion in a company or sabotage my success in business. And so you always think you're being wronged in some way, that you're a victim of the external world. But the word pronoia has the opposite definition. It is the belief that the universe is conspiring in your favor and that life is working for you and not against you. Now, this isn't to say there'll be events in your life that may not be fair. That's just part of life. That's how life operates. But it's to understand that how you interpret those events will determine the actions you take and what your future holds. Yeah. And if you have the humility to seek the lesson and to understand that lots of other people go through exactly the same thing, probably in the very moment you're going through this right now. But your power is not in experiencing that event. Your power is in how you choose to deal with it. And if you deal with it in a way that makes you stronger, you will become unstoppable.
How powerful is that? It's absolutely true. And I'm super conscious of your time, so, but there's still some bits to get in. Am I all right to keep going?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. My question to you now, because we've looked at success when you were, you know, just starting out in the financial world, success when you were leaving the corporate life to move into the entrepreneurial self-employment life. What does success look like to you now?
Success for me now has a very simple definition, and it is simply to be better than who I was yesterday. That's it. And the reason that's important goal of mine when I think about success is because better can change any week, any month, any year. Mm-hmm. But if I'm always focused on being better, even just by 1%, no doubt in time, I will reap the rewards. Yeah. So for me, it's about embracing that eternal student mindset, that constant work in progress, to realize I'm never the finished article. Mm-hmm. And the moment I think I am is where complacency creeps in. It's where I start losing out on being able to adapt, on being able to remain relevant in the business world. So for me, it's success is just being better than who I was yesterday and leaving a legacy that not only I, but my family can be proud of.
Mm-hmm. Love your definition of success. I'm gonna ask for the challenge side of that though, is how, when you are continually striving to be better, you've put the caveat there, you know, even if it's just 1%.
Yeah.
How does someone who is continually striving to be better find the balance between, because we've seen many people, you know, lose their ability to take stock of what's happening in real life and be so focused on the future that they forget to live a life, as you mentioned earlier on. How does someone find the balance between continually striving to be better and celebrating the wins along the way and, you know, looking at how successful you've been?
Yeah, and I think this is why coming to the definition of better, it is important to understand what better is for you. So better doesn't have to be about work. It doesn't have to be about getting another 100 clients. Better could simply be, some days for me, spending more time with my daughter, spending a week with my family, disconnected from work. That could be better, and that's where the balance comes in. There's a saying that I often say to my clients and the audiences I speak to, which is work hard, rest hard. You know, the reason rest is important is you cannot thrive in the long term unless you understand your own energetic rhythm between periods of deep work and periods of intentional rest. Because it's when you rest that you have your most creative breakthroughs, but where you give your mind the chance to connect all of those dots. Because every day we're running around, we're moving from place to place to place, we're learning from conversations, we're learning from books, we're learning from mentors and coaches. But how often do we give ourselves the space to digest all of that information, to make connections from that information, and to access the creative energy that we all possess? You know, you asked me a question and also talked about earlier about lots of people enter the field that we operate in. Lots of people become coaches and speakers and mentors. But I think the one thing that has helped me stand out is this desire to access my creative energy and to express it in the best way I can. And I think innovative and original thinking, thinking different, if you will, is what allows people to become aware of our work. You know, when I published my book, for example, I didn't want people to just go, hey, Simon's got a book out, go to the bookstore, buy it, because that is what everyone is going to do. Everyone's going to launch it, have an event, and people go buy it and they advertise about it. I wanted it to be something people would talk about effortlessly. So what I did is I approached it as if I was a marketer. And so weeks before the book came out, I partnered with the Connaught Hotel in London, and we ended up designing a energized cocktail. And it was shot, the video, it's a beautiful video. It was shot by one of Jamie Oliver's production team, and we put it out to social media. And so for a few weeks after publication, if you went to the Connaught bar and you ordered the energized cocktail, it would be mixed for you and presented on a signed copy of my book.
How cool is
now,
that?
Now, can you imagine the
theater photos, around it?
The videos that were taken on social media and people sharing it on their feeds. And I still remember within the first week of publication, I took the editorial team from Penguin to the bar to experience that.
Yep.
So they all had an energized cocktail with a signed book, and we took a group photo. And it was such an incredible moment. Yes, it was about the book, but the way it was put together got people's attention.
Absolutely.
And then a few weeks after publication, we also did one of the world's first book launches in the metaverse. So people could put their MetaQuest headsets on, and my avatar was there, and I was doing a talk in a virtual room with people's avatars there over 7 different countries, but in the same virtual room.
How cool is that?
And for me, the ability to think different comes from our desire to access our creativity. And creativity is directly correlated to how diverse your inputs are. And the more diverse your inputs, the more different you show up in the world.
This is so interesting. Well, one, I massively resonate, and you know, you are speaking my language when you're talking about not only giving yourself the opportunity to continually work forward, but also take the rest and take breaks, because that's where the creativity comes through. But being willing to take a risk, because there is a risk that these things, everything that you've done, doesn't really work. It falls flat on its face, but there's also a risk that it can, you know, what's the phrase? What if I fall, but what if you fly? Mm. That's the ability to just think differently, I think, is fabulous. And I love the theatre around it and the uniqueness around it. So I suppose my question is, what's next? What's next for you?
So I'll split that into two parts. So I'll do what next on the creative side, because I want to share some really cool stuff I'm working on. And then what next on the professional side.
Absolutely.
So what next on the creative side? In a few weeks' time, I've partnered with an artist who's fairly well known in her field. So she puts together abstract, colourful paintings, which typically get put up in the lobbies of corporate offices or luxury hotels. Mm-hmm. And she's in the process in the next few weeks of putting together an original piece of art called Energize. And we're looking to film the process and me looking at this painting, going to her studio to create a bit of content for social media. But also it helps, again, raise awareness about the book, but through a unique
different medium, yeah.
And then we're looking to raise funds either through the sale or the auction of the piece that would then go to a charity that has a good cause. And then Q2 next year, we're working towards creating an 8-course dining experience inspired by my book, where I'm collaborating with a chef to create these 8 plates of food that somehow can speak to elements of my book. And again, this will become hugely talked about, but the cool thing is that the food and the book won't be talked about. It will be the experience. But through the experience, the food and book will come to the front.
Oh, I love it.
So that's a couple of the projects. And then medium term, I'm currently working in exploring AI and more metaverse projects, the ability to create Simon AI. Mm-hmm. So people can get coached or mentored by Simon AI, looks like me, has my exact same voice, but is my AI equivalent. So I could be here doing this podcast and somebody in some place around the world right now could be coached by my AI by putting on their headset and speaking to my avatar AI.
Those are some of the things
I'm exploring.
Is all of this common knowledge? Or have we got some exclusives
here? I've been talking about some of this already.
from
my professional career, I'm looking to expand my speaking more internationally.
Yep.
So the book has certainly helped with that. Mm-hmm. I came back from Los Angeles a couple of weeks ago. I'm going to New York next week, and then end of the year I'll be in Dubai. And so for me, it's speaking more internationally. I'm doing a lot more stuff in the US, which is great because the US market for what I do is massive.
Huge.
And then longer term, maybe a second book and maybe an option to do something on TV or film.
How exciting. I mean, I feel like we've barely scratched the surface, but I am super conscious of your time. So I want to say a huge thank you. I am so excited for all of this. And I love that you're creating experiences and creating memories this year. For me, has been all about creating memories, taking photos. And I think you're doing that to the nth degree. I am a massive fan of Maya Angelou. And she says, people will forget what you said. People will forget what you did, but they'll never forget the way you made them feel.
And that's all about energy.
Exactly that. This is what you're literally creating, though.
How can you create an energetic experience that is different? And people try to overcomplicate it. They say, well, I just speak or I just coach. How do I really make that different? I mean, just go to YouTube and look up Bill Gates's TED talk that he delivered about the work that his foundation is doing about malaria. Around 1/2 to 3/4 of the way through that speech, he has a glass jar on a small table on stage, which is actually containing a swarm of mosquitoes. He opens that jar, the swarm of mosquitoes go flying into the audience. The audience is on edge. And Bill says, by the way, you're safe. None of these mosquitoes have malaria, but I just wanted you to feel what it was like for people in the countries I've shared with you to fear that a single bite from the next mosquito could contain malaria. Mm. And it became the most talked about presentation at that TED conference. You just have to think a little different.
What an epic ending to a fabulous podcast. I do want to say a huge thank you for sharing your time. We're going to put all of the links into the show notes thank for you. Your book, for any of your upcoming talks, for all of your social media. If you hadn't already been aware of Simon, I am sure you will be following him even more, and I am so excited to see what's next to come. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.